Welcome to another edition of the Better Health Radio Show. We've got Dr. Renee Boyce, your host, and she's here smiling prettily. Let's bring her in right now. Good evening to you, Doc.
Hi, good evening, Kristen.
Hi. I see you're very happy this evening. You have two guests here with you. I'm quite sure you'll introduce them in a second, but what's making you smell so sweetly this afternoon?
Actually, well, most persons who know me know that I smile a lot. Mm-hmm. There's some people who actually don't believe that I smile. but I'm actually here laughing at one of our guests.
Source of entertainment. Okay, go ahead.
Yes, I will introduce our guests a little later. But good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Better Health Radio Show. This is where we help you to live your best life. And I am very excited to bring you another show, a very informative show, and we'll get into what today's show is going to be on, but just a general shout out to our listening public. I continue to run into people who say, are you going to be on this evening? Are you doing the show this evening? You're going to be on? So good evening to all those persons who I bump into from time to time and ask about the show. Enjoy doing this, bringing the show and interacting with my guests and interacting with the listening public. So we press on. Today is Sunday the 15th. That will make Tuesday the 17th. Tuesday is World Hypertension Day, I believe. Yes, World Hypertension Day. And hence, the most logical thing for us to discuss today would be antenatal history. Now, the most logical thing for us to discuss today would be hypertension. And that's exactly what we're going to discuss today. We have two wonderful ladies who are associated in different realms with the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Barbados. And let me take this opportunity to say a wonderful good evening to Michelle, Mrs. Daniel, and the staff over there at the Heart and Stroke Foundation doing a phenomenal job with our public. Good evening to you all. And we're going to meet our guests this evening. First, I want to introduce our patient. We have Miss Margaret Campbell. Good evening, Miss Campbell.
Good evening.
How are you doing this evening?
I'm okay.
I want to say thank you at the beginning for opening the doors of your life for us and allowing us to take a sneak peek into your life. And we are expecting that your story will inspire somebody else to continue on that healthy journey. And we also have Miss Aline, Nurse Aline. She was here on a show. We had a show a couple of months back, and Miss Aline was on. She did a phenomenal job, and she's here ready and raring to go for this evening. Good evening, Nurse Aline.
Hi, good evening, Dr. Boyce, and good evening, Ready Plan. <Thank
you>. Yes, so it was Miss Aline's bubbly personality that's already coming through here on the cameras. I'm so sorry that you in Lake Miss Aline said Radio Land can't see what we see here on the radio. The smiling faces, you know, the facial expressions, Greston's expressions that run me into trouble.
Sometimes I'm glad they can't see. Sometimes I'm very glad they can't see.
No, I don't remember whose song it is, but I know that one of the lines is, I ain't in that. Right? You there on that limb by yourself, sir. So, yes, World Hypertension Day. And we all know in Barbados that we have a significant problem with hypertension. Our statistics for hypertension are, I don't want to use the word ridiculous, but ridiculous is the word that should be used. One of the problems that we have with hypertension is its silence. That's why hypertension is called the silent killer. It says nothing until it is almost too late, or in some cases, too late. So we are going to start with Miss Aline. Let's talk a little bit about the Heart and Stroke Foundation, their role in managing persons who have hypertension, and then we are going to be all in Ms. Campbell's business.
Okay, hi again, Radio Land. I am the program coordinator in the Care That Rehab Unit at Heart and Stroke, and There we have three programs. We have the cardiac rehab program. That's for persons who would have had a cardiac event or had cardiac surgery. We have the stroke rehab program, and of course for stroke clients. And then we have the preventative program. And you know, when we look across these different programs, we see we will find patients that have hypertension. And we know that cardiac disease and stroke is one of the complications of having high blood pressure. So here at Heart and Stroke, throughout the program is education, exercise. We look at lifestyle modification, trying to help the client to realize that it's important for them to adapt some healthy lifestyle changes in order to keep their heart healthy and to keep their brain healthy, because hypertension can cause heart disease and can cause a stroke, as I mentioned earlier. So it is about education, 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 and helping them to understand, well, I would say empowering them, right? Because it's all about them actually taking that responsibility to change their life for themselves. We are there to motivate them, to cheer them on, but they have to understand that they are active participants in their healthcare.
Yeah, I agree with you completely, Ms. Aline. I got into trouble once for saying that a patient's hypertension was not, I'm trying to phrase this delicately because these are public airways, but it's not my problem. It is my concern because I am a physician and I am concerned about patients and I'm concerned about their well-being. But the responsibility for your health, ladies and gentlemen, it lies at you. It lies at you, the individual. We can give you all the guidance. We can tell you what the studies say. We can tell you how medications and lifestyle changes help to prevent or in some cases reverse or make better some of the conditions. But if you refuse to take any learning, there is nothing more that we can do as physicians. So let's have a chat with Ms. Campbell now. Ms. Campbell, tell us a little bit about yourself. Who is Margaret Campbell?
Margaret Campbell, a 67-year-old retired person.
Good for you.
Yes. I would have had, daughter would have told me I had hypertension around my late 40s, early 50s. And that's when it started.
Okay, when the doctor said to you, your blood pressure is high, what did you think? What were the thoughts going through your head? You know, this doctor joking, me, high blood pressure?
Oh, well, I didn't take anything anymore because it's really a family thing. It's in my family. So I was alarmed about it.
Right, so one, Ms. Campbell just mentioned one of the risk factors for hypertension. Family history. Those persons who have hypertension, if they look through their family, they would tend to see that there is somebody else with hypertension in their family. That being said, not necessarily so. So just because you have hypertension, that doesn't necessarily mean that the other people in your family have hypertension. I do remember some patients saying, you know, but nobody in my family got pressure, so how I get pressure? And the answer to that is that you're an individual and these things can happen. We're going to talk a little bit about lifestyle and how it impacts on hypertension. So what advice, Ms. Campbell, did your doctor give you at that time the diagnosis of hypertension was made? As a matter of fact, do you remember what the numbers were?
No, because it's almost 20 years ago.
That is true.
The doctor would have said to reduce the salt intake, exercise, because I have always been a big person, and that is about the exercise and reduce my salt intake.
At that time, were you prescribed any medication or you were only told to make those?
I was told at first, but over a period of time, he tried not to give me medication, but then eventually I was put on medication.
Okay, and this is where we as Barbadians tend to run ourselves into trouble. when it comes to medication. I remember when I was working at one of our public institutions, persons are encouraged when you're coming to the doctor, bring all of your medications. And that's something that, that's a very good piece of advice, I believe, for anybody who's taking any kind of medication. If you can't walk with the medication, what I've seen some patients do, they snip the tops off the boxes and they put them in their purses or wallets so that they're not walking around with, you know, the boxes and the cumbersome boxes. And know that we are in this digital era where everybody and their mother and the two cats and the frog that lives outside, everybody has a phone that can take pictures. So the other option is to take pictures of your medications and have them with you. One of the things that I try to get my patients to do is to learn your medications. It really is not a difficult thing to do. I think persons are intimidated by the chemical names. Oh, them words too big. I can't call them words. What the mind of a man can conceive, he can achieve. So you can learn the names of your medication. So 20 years ago, Miss Campbell, there you are sitting in the doctor's office. The doctor has told you that you have high blood pressure and that you need to reduce your salt, that you need to exercise, and that you have to take some medications eventually. So this is, I get sidetracked sometimes. I was telling a story. So back in the government institutions, we encourage people to bring their medication. I'm going somewhere with this. And people will come back with a supermarket plastic bag full of medication that has not been opened. And they come back with it and they're wondering why their blood pressure is still high. I don't know. My mouth would just usually drop open and I would just close my jaw and press on. Were you compliant with your medication? Did you take it as you should?
Always from that day until now. I started with one, was taking one tablet, but eventually over the years, right now I'm taking two.
Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations to you. You are one in a few who are, we don't say compliant, no. Compliant means that we are trying to force people to do things. We say adherent, where people are going along with the suggestions that we would have made as healthcare practitioners. So you mentioned that you always would have been a big person. So did you get in that exercise that would have been suggested by your doctor?
Well, in my early years, I used to exercise a lot, but after, sometimes when you're working, the work demands prevent you from getting to the gym. I think, but I was always a exercise fanatic in my earlier years. But no, I don't get in the exercise, that we should.
Okay, so let's go back to one of the first things that you said when you introduced yourself. I believe the adjective that you used was retired.
Yes, I am retired.
So that would mean that the work demands are no longer there.
No longer there.
But, yes.
But I would have, I don't know, I think I developed anxiety at some point in time. So even though I'm not at work, the anxiety still take a toll on your body.
Okay. Well, this is why we have persons like Miss Aline who can, you know, assist with all the different, what we call comorbidities. These are diseases that go along with having one disease. So hypertension is your primary disease. Anxiety is a comorbidity, something else that has occurred probably as a result of hypertension or maybe of something that might have happened in your life. But that's when we'll get Miss Aline on your case. So we're coming back to you, Miss Aline. Don't you worry. You store up your strength already for when I'm ready to pounce on you again. So you've gone along all of these years. What sorts of checks did you get along the years, Miss Campbell, to monitor your hypertension?
A normal 3 months. At first it was monthly and then it met every 2 months. But now I see the doctor every 3 months.
Every 3 months? Yeah. Okay, did you get blood tests and heart tests, anything like that?
Yeah, all of those things we got over a period of time.
And these were okay?
Yes, they were.
Okay, so you've been doing generally well. Now we are going to stick a pin right there because we have a little detour in your story and we're going to let the listeners hang on to their seat edges when we get back to Miss Campbell. Over to you now, Miss Aline. Yes, let's talk about the typical patient who would come in with hypertension. What can they expect from the Heart and Stroke Foundation? And I say typical in inverted commas simply because every patient is an individual.
Yes.
But let's say somebody comes in with a diagnosis of hypertension and they're supposed to get, let's talk about preventative treatment, because we don't want to give away all of Ms. Campbell's story just yet. So let's talk about prevention. What are the general things that would happen to somebody who comes through the doors of the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Barbados? I know one of the things is that they would meet somebody with a smile. I am telling you that that is the truth. That's one of the things that they will get. And after that smile, what happens?
First, let me say, Renee, that they need to have a referral from the doctor first, right, to join any of the programs at Heart and Stroke. When they come in the preventative program, they go through a series of assessment, and that assessment would include, yes, taking of the blood pressure. If the blood pressure is high, we find out why it's high. Some patients, when they come in, they haven't taken their medication, or some patients are not aware that it's high because they don't take their blood pressure. They don't take it because they don't think that they should take it, or some actually leave that monitoring of their BP to the responsibility of the doctor when they do their doctor visit, or like us, when they come into a setting like us. So we use that time, once we see the blood pressure is high, to teach them, and so that they can understand that they need to take their blood pressure, they need to take their medication, as you said, before, adhere to the medication regime that the doctor would have put them on. We emphasize the importance of exercise. We will refer them to the nutritionist, and the nutritionist will then assess, and then she will find out if there's any nutritional areas where she might need to help them with, as relates to some people might have a high intake of salt in their diet. I remember one lady, she liked salt and she was hypertensive and she was still taking salt. And when she leaves, she still says she's taking she salt, right? So she likes salt and she was hypertensive. But eventually we were able to show her that, you know, that salt will implicate her high blood pressure, and I find out that she is better, right? So the program is generally education. They get to see the fitness instructor that will help them then with their exercise and stuff. So basically, yeah, that is it.
One of the things that I have recognized is we can't take anything for granted as healthcare professionals. Mm-hmm. Persons really and truly, honestly, did not think that cooking with salt meat was cooking with salt, despite the fact that it is called salt meat or salt fish. They thought that the only salt that we were asking them to reduce was the salt that they were pouring in to the food. But there's salt. I mean, the salt in salt meat and salt fish is not hidden. It really is not hidden. But from the time you touch salt fish, your fingers are full of salt. And you know that you can't use salt meat the way that it is.
That's true.
Because you have to boil it, and get all of the salt, which is pointless because you're boiling out all of what was put in. Nevertheless, I will share a story that was passed down. This is not folklore, but this was passed down from one generation to the next. There was a gentleman who went to see his doctor, and it was found out incidentally that he had had very, very high blood pressure. And his doctor spoke with him, explained the risks. You know, sir, you're at risk for a stroke. You're at risk for a heart attack. You're young. You can still make these changes. So tell me a little bit about what you eat. And it was discovered that this gentleman was eating barbecue pigtails every single day of the week. So the doctor would have explained to him, you know, sir, really and truly, you cannot be eating barbecue pigtails every day in the week. That's going to send up your blood pressure. It's going to help send up your blood pressure. So he went away. He went away with advice on how to adjust his diet, on some medications, and he was brought back in 3 weeks, I believe, to have his blood pressure checked again. Then he comes and he gets his blood pressure checked off the charts. So the doctor is thinking there must be a secondary cause, meaning that it's not what we call essential hypertension. There's another cause in the body that's leading to this hypertension, like maybe kidney disease or something with the adrenal gland, something causing this man's blood pressure to be so high. And lo and behold, said gentleman has continued every single day to have barbecued pigtails. And the doctor started to rant and rage. But sorry, I did tell you. And the doctor was not me. This story sounds like me, but it wasn't me. The doctor's like, but sir, I told you that, you know, the salt meat isn't good for you. Why are you continuing to eat it? And the response was, doc, let me tell you something. I can die with a pigtail stick between my teeth. So sad. So done.
Wow.
All right. So we don't want anybody to die unnecessarily, you know, die from preventable causes. So we had mentioned in the beginning that I failed to mention that if you wanted to call the studio, you could dial 434-1790, not a word, Gregston. And if you want to send a WhatsApp, 266-4862. Today, the 15th of May, this is the Sunday that's closest to World Hypertension Day, celebrated all around the world on the 17th of May. And we are in with members of the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Barbados. We are in with Nurse Ali, and we have as our additional guest, Ms. Campbell, who is going to tell us the rest of her story. So I hope that you are enjoying what we've delivered so far. So Ms. Campbell, here we are back with you again.
Yes.
This diagnosis of hypertension, when you were in your 40s, you're now 67 and retired. When did the story change for you? When did you stop being well?
In terms of the stroke?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, well, I did have a stroke on April the 16th, 2019.
Okay, so take us back. Well, that's only 2 years ago, 3 years ago. So take us back. I'm sure you remember that day very well.
Yes. Well, it was around 10 o'clock at night. I was getting ready to go to bed. I go to the bathroom before I go to bed as usual. I did what I had to do. And then I realized I couldn't feel the paper, the salt paper in my hand. And then my mouth started to talk funny, just feel funny. So I was calling for my husband at the time, but he had passed his day. But when I called for him, I found the mouth sound funny. So it's at that time that I get him to, well, I took some aspirin, because I've always heard that you'll be just an aspirin and drinking water and that type of stuff that prevent you from getting it too serious. So then we went to Sandy Crest, and then from there to the hospital.
Okay, so there you are. You don't have feeling in the right hand. Any symptoms in the right leg?
No. Actually, that was only for a few seconds. It came back. And so it was just a few seconds. It only lasted for a few seconds.
Okay. So by the time you would have gotten down to accident and emergency, eventually, everything had gone back to normal?
Yes.
Okay.
They call it a TIA.
The TIA stands for transient ischemic attack. Transient means that it's not permanent, it passes. Ischemic means that that's an area of the brain where the blood flow had temporarily been stopped. An attack is, well, just that, an attack, something that happened. And the difference between a stroke or what we call a cerebrovascular accident or a CVA is that the transient ischemic attack, the symptoms disappear. They go back to normal. Whereas with the stroke, the damage is permanent. And I say that guardedly, but yes, that's the difference between the two. So if you look around, you know, when you're on the road, people watching and so on, you might see people who are walking with their arm bent. And when they take a step, they take a wide step with the foot, the leg that's affected. Those are persons who would have had a stroke. And strokes, the symptoms and signs of strokes depend on which area of the brain would have been impacted. And when we get the neurologist on, we'll talk about the different areas of the brain and the different signs or the different things that you see when people get a stroke. So we're talking about patient experience here. What were you feeling, Ms. Campbell? What was going through your head?
Well, I was afraid. I was afraid. And I did not spend any time in the hospital, but I was sent for various tests. I think I had heart tests, I had cholesterol tests, all the different checks I had, but everything came back okay.
Were you worried that?
Well, that is where my anxiety got worse. The doctors then determined that everything that I feel in there was anxiety, because people will say that if you have a stroke already, you will have another one. So that is where my anxiety kicked in.
Yeah, so we are learning a lot from Ms. Campbell. First of all, by what she was saying, we've learned about the risk factors for hypertension. So the risk factors for hypertension include salt intake, family history, and obesity. And we are also learning that the risk factors for stroke would be a previous stroke or a TIA. And what you've said is real, because having heard that you've had a mini stroke, what we call in Barbados a mini stroke. And mini doesn't mean that it should be taken lightly at all. Mini for us means that it wasn't a major stroke. But we can see how it can lead to anxiety, because as you're going about your daily actions, your daily activities, you're wondering, is this going to happen again? And if it happens again, is it going to be a big stroke? Is it going to take my life? You know, and these are concerns that persons have. And this is where the team approach comes in. So, Ms. Aline, let me ask you a question. Over at the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Barbados, do we have a facility for counseling?
When we have a client that might have a psychological issue, they will be referred to the psychiatric unit at the QEH. Yeah, but we don't have a counselor attached, to the foundation.
Okay, but there is that facility, and persons have been referred from the foundation over to the other.
Well, persons were referred, but the sad thing in Barbados is that psychiatric, they think is you're mad. I'm putting it in Bajan terms.
Yes. Right, and that's so true.
So therefore, those clients that were referred refused to go because of, that.
The stigma
right attached to psychiatric.
One of the things that has been happening recently is that mental health problems have been getting more and more focus, airplay, and so on. But there needs to be so much more, because this is stigma that has gone down from generations and generations before. And once people hear, I need to refer you to a psychiatrist or a psychologist, or we've done all of these tests and they're all normal, perhaps your symptoms are coming from something psychological, we could as well have had told that person something else, two backwards in English, because persons still don't want to go and get the help. And the thing is, you get so much value sometimes from just sitting down and talking from individuals who are trained, because it's okay to come and sit down in my office and talk and get things off of your chest, because, talking really does help. But the persons like psychiatrists and psychologists, they're trained. They know which questions to ask to get out this particular, tease out this information. They know how to guide the conversation. They know how to share tools to help you to cope. And so we are saying, here on air, if you find that you do have a psychological, psychiatric problem, don't stay at home. Don't allow the fear of being labeled as mad, which I think is very unkind. But don't let that stop you from getting the help that you need. You need to see people and don't see them, and just do what's necessary for you.
Dr. Boy, stress is also one of the risk factors for high blood pressure, right? So,
and look at where we're living now.
Yes, yeah.
Good old COVID, and I'm not trivializing COVID, and the same mental health issue that we were just discussing, Miss Aline. Much of the mental health challenges, or many of the challenges that we have as individuals, have been worsened by the COVID-19 pandemic. Being on lockdowns, job losses, reduction in income, the uncertainty of what's going to happen.
Fear.
To take the vaccine and don't take the vaccine, fear. All of these different things have been borne out since the COVID-19. And certainly persons are going to have more and more elevated blood pressures unless they seek some sort of help. And there are places, we have 9 public polyclinics. We have hundreds of medical practitioners. We were just listening to Dr. Brown talking about the accident and emergency. So I'm not going to advise that you necessarily go down to A&E to chit chat. That's not the place for you to chit chat at all. The accident and emergency is for precisely that. Accidents and emergencies. Not for you to have a general talk. But if you feel as though you are about to take your life, or I know that this isn't the conversation that we started out having, but it's necessary for us to say these things. If you feel that you are in danger of walking out of your head or of taking your life, certainly just go and get some help where it is available. And in addition to our public setting, we do have private facilities where persons can attend for help. So back to you, Ms. Campbell. We are back with you, back in your business again. So there you are, 3 years ago in April, and the doctor has told you that you had a stroke, and you told us that you were afraid and this has impacted your anxiety. What advice were you given at that time with respect to managing your life? How were you told life was going to change for you?
Well, I wasn't told that, but I gotta keep telling me I have to relax. That I'm going to make myself sick with the anxiety, because there was kind of thing, after I had this stroke, I was given to go to outpatient. I got 3 months down the road, and I got more anxious. If I had a stroke, I had to 3 months to go to outpatient. All of those kind of things started to work on my body, I would say. And I did, you mentioned counseling, I did go. 3 sessions with a counselor that tried to get me, because I stopped driving, so she was trying to get me to drive. But I just cannot tell why, if I have a stroke, I have to wait 3 or 6 months to see this body, next body. So I went back to my private doctor. I gave them all the papers I got from the hospital. I went and I paid for all the tests, everything that came back okay, but the anxiety is what took over, and I got afraid of driving. I will not drive unless I have somebody in the car. At first, I won't drive at all. I use taxis, I get friends, and different people to take me to therapy, and I just won't drive alone.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Have you started driving yet?
Yes, I only did that. I have been driving a little while, but myself, as I say, I have some money in the car. But from April the 1st, I did some New Year's resolution. I said, I'm not paying any more money for anybody to drive me. I am going to drive to the heart and stroke come the first Tuesday in April. And I did that. And ever since then, I've been driving myself. I even drive myself to church on the highway, to St. David's Anglican Church at Easter morning by myself.
I am so proud of you, Ms. Campbell. I am so proud of you. This is the first time I'm meeting you, but this is a success story. This is wonderful news.
And all that is because of the Heart and Stroke Foundation.
Well, props to the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Barbados. Oh my goodness me. Yeah, we're having a mini party over here.
Yeah, I joined the orchestra on after trying all kind of things. I joined the orchestra in November of last year. And since then, I've been getting results. I like the group sessions. I haven't missed a class yet, unless there's no class. And I'm enjoying it.
Well, I was just about to ask you, you got there before me. I was just about to ask you, what was your experience like with the Heart and Stroke Foundation? So far you've made friends over there.
Yes, I find everybody is so helpful. The nurses, the staff, the therapists, the occupational therapists, the whole group. Some of them are worse than I am, but I find everybody come together and help one another. And I think that helps with my anxiety, because once a time I will not leave the house unless I take an anxiety tablet. But now I hardly take an anxiety tablet.
Yay.
Okay, so Greta would know this, right? Every single time I smile, you can actually see my back teeth when I smile. It is the truth. What Greston? Go ahead.
I'm just smiling at what you said, and that's why I said earlier, sometimes I'm glad they can't see our reactions when we're here. Yes, you do have a very pretty smile.
Thank you. But the truth is, yes, I know it is. That's the case. You can see my back teeth, right? So all know. You can see all of my molars because I am here smiling and smiling at Miss Campbell's achievements. I had chatted with her earlier, but I didn't know that we had reached so much success through the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Barbados. And I'm glad that I didn't know, so that you could see that my reaction was, you know, the reaction that the staff over there feel when their patients do well. So talk to me, Miss Aline, about those things that excite you about working at the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Barbados.
We have a witness right now on. That's a scam.
True.
Miss Campbell, I like to see the improvement in patients. Like Miss Campbell, she would have mentioned, she came in. I remember her when she first came in, very nervous, you know, and now she's so interactive, so engaging with the other clients. And as you heard, she can drive. And I like to see the improvement in patients, to see where they were at first. The struggles, and then to see the success, and they're actually lighting up, even speaking about it. Yeah, so that's my greatest joy, in seeing clients succeeding in their journey. And I also love the engagement and of the clients talking to them. I have encountered so many relationships that I would not have encountered if I was not at Heart and Stroke Foundation. There's so many people I've met through that setting. So that is my joy, in the engagement and meeting new clients.
So we had chatted a little bit earlier to Miss Aline, and we were talking about the fact that the levels for diagnosing hypertension have changed, and we are going to share that information with our listeners now. And for this year, the theme for World Hypertension Day is measure your blood pressure accurately, control it, live. Is that it?
Let me see.
We have to get the right theme, but we'll get the theme. Don't worry about that. Yes. So whilst Miss Aline talks about the levels of blood pressure for the diagnosis of hypertension, what's normal and what's abnormal, I'm going to get the correct theme for you. I had it pulled up here, but let me just make sure I don't misinform the public. So go ahead, Miss Aline, let's share those values with our listeners.
All right, so now the new changes are that the normal is anything less than 120 over 80, the systolic being 120, diastolic being 80, according to Beijing, the top number and the high number. the elevated BP is between 120 to 129 over 80. You'll be diagnosed as stage 1 hypertensive if you have a systolic value of 130 to 139 and a diastolic of 80 to 89. Stage 2 will be anything like 140 or higher, or the diastolic being 90 or higher. And then they have the hypertension crisis, which is a systolic of anything higher than 180 and the diastolic being anything higher than 120. And that is it.
Thank you very much. So you know that that's probably going to be one of the questions for our listeners. And it looks as though Grayson wants to tell me something. Am I correct?
This WhatsApper said, good night. The doctor mentioned that the high blood pressure could have caused not by, the pigtails. I'm reading what is written here. The doctor mentioned that the high blood pressure could have caused not by the pigtails. She said a different reason, so I'm guessing they're saying it wasn't because of the pigtails, it was a different reason. Can you expound on that, please? That's what the question really is asking. What else was it?
Okay, so the hypertension that we talk about in most cases is what we call essential hypertension or primary hypertension, where there is no anatomical underlying cause, meaning that in the body itself, and this is the simplified version. And this is the one where you find that there's the family history or you see it in persons as they get older and so on. Secondary hypertension means that there's an underlying cause leading to hypertension. So sometimes there are persons who have kidney disease. Mind you, kidney disease can occur as a result of hypertension. But in some cases, a problem with your kidneys can lead to elevated blood pressures. Sometimes you can have tumors in one of the special glands in the body, and they can produce different hormones that send up the blood pressure. So when we talk about secondary hypertension, there's an underlying cause for it. Primary hypertension or essential hypertension, which is the one that most persons, the vast majority of people have, is there's no underlying cause for it. And I hope that makes it clear for the listener.
All right, the second one here is questioning, or rather wants you to tell them about biscuits. They're wondering if they're filled with salt, because lots of people here in Barbados eat lots of biscuits, hard and soft. I'm trying to describe it without using the brand names. They want to know how healthy is that?
So one of the things that I think we need to understand and to learn as a nation is how to read labels, how to read food labels. And we can look at the different ingredients in foods and determine whether the level of salt in that particular food is too high. And biscuits are known to have salt, and salt tastes good. It does. If you have food that has salt sprinkled on it, you know, it does add flavor. So we're not saying that salt doesn't taste good. And we're not saying that you shouldn't ever use salt. The issue with salt is how much we use as a Caribbean people. And biscuits brings up a very particular issue, the issue of hidden salt. And I remember that there used to be an ad on the television where an individual was opening a bag of chips, and when they poured out the chips, they poured out salt instead, because chips would be one of those things that are full of salt, biscuits and so on and so forth. Within our public setting, and again within our private setting, we have nutritionists who are able to offer us a wealth of information on what to eat. So yes, biscuits are salty, and if you taste them, they taste salty. Yeah. So we're not saying that you are not to eat biscuits. It is in moderation. Every single thing in moderation. So hidden salt, yes, there's hidden salt in biscuits. Look at the ingredients list. And one of the things about the ingredients list is that they're usually listed in descending order, meaning that it starts with the greatest ingredient or the one that's the most, and it goes all the way down to the least amount in that particular thing. So if you see salt as ingredient number two, well, certainly that would not be one of the best foods to have.
All right.
And let me
go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I was going to say that I was correct about the theme for World Hypertension Day this year. I don't know, maybe my eyes were crossed, maybe my glasses need changing, who knows. But the theme for this year is measure your blood pressure accurately, control it, live longer. And with Ms. Aline, we're going to discuss those three things as we look towards the end of our show. You wanted to say something else, Gretchen?
Yeah, this question is, my question, can you see an elevation of blood pressure related to perimenopause and menopause?
And the answer to that question is yes. There are some people who, for the first time in their life, might be diagnosed with hypertension around menopause. And menopause is a very, I was about to say unusual, but it's not unusual. It's a process of life. But several things happen during menopause, and changes in blood pressure would be one of those things. And some persons can have their blood pressure being lowered. The vast majority of people, their blood pressures become elevated. And this just goes to reinforce the fact that we should continue getting regular checkups. It is not a case of that doctor only want money, nothing wrong with me. Doctor only want money. Okay, that's not a problem. If you don't give the doctor the money, there's somebody else who's going to be waiting for it. So you choose. You choose whether you're going to give the doctor the money or you're going to give it to the funeral director, you know?
Sure.
It's going to go somewhere. You can't carry it with you. But yes, you can have changes in blood pressure with menopause and perimenopause. That's it?
Yes. Carry on, please.
Thank you. It is now approximately 12 minutes to 7 here in Barbados and across the Eastern Caribbean. And like I usually say, if you are so unfortunate that you are now joining us, you have missed a wealth of information. We have learned so much from Miss Margaret Campbell. We've been talking to her about her journey with hypertension and a TIA, which is a transient ischemic attack or a mini stroke. We've been talking with Miss Aline, and they are from the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Barbados. And as we wind up, Miss Campbell, what I want you to think about would be some words of advice for persons who might be going through a situation similar to the one that you are going through. What words of advice that you can offer them? And I'm going to come back to you. You have any tips, Miss Aline, about how to correctly measure your blood pressure at home? I remember years ago, the cardiologists especially weren't very happy about persons measuring their blood pressure at home. And in some cases, patients got, they got tied to their machines. You know, they'd be measuring their blood pressure 6 and 7 times in a day. And, you know, if it was 141 on 80, and then they check it 2 minutes later and it's 120 on 80, you know, they're thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to die. And then because they start to panic, it goes up. So it reads 150. And the poor doctors are getting calls all the time. Any tips for correctly measuring your blood pressure?
Yes, please. And I have some tips. One, make sure you have a good device. And make sure it's working well. Make sure you have the right cuff size. Cuff size are important. Sometimes people use incorrect cuffs, smaller cuffs, and they have big arms. That will give you an inaccurate reading. If you're doing your blood pressure, you should do your blood pressure early in the morning, preferably, and at night. You take it twice, and so that you can know, well, if this is correct. And you always note your blood pressure. Once you have your blood pressure noted in the book, you can always take it to the doctor so they can see the trends. When you're taking your blood pressure, if you have eaten, if you have drink caffeine, had a smoke, or if you have drank alcohol, it's better to take that measurement 30 minutes before, 30 minutes after, sorry, you have eaten. When you're doing your blood pressure, you sit quietly, you place your feet on the ground, your back supported against the chair, you're calm, you don't allow a person to distract you or to have you in a conversation. And you also place your hand at heart level while you're taking your blood pressure on the table or a desk and not in the bed, hang down. Most people get up, take the blood pressure in the bed, and their hands are not in the correct position. And that will also give you an inaccurate reading. When you're taking your blood pressure, you take it on the bare skin. So you don't put the cuff over clothing. And as I said earlier, it is always good to repeat that blood pressure again, just to make sure that it is accurate. And those are just little tips.
Yeah, the recommendation is that if it is more than 5 points out, that you should repeat your blood pressure again. And certainly one of the purposes of doing your blood pressure is to be able to report to your doctor that there is something that's going on.
Yes.
That's the reason for doing it. The reason you don't just do it because you can, you do it so that you're monitoring it and you are able to alert your doctor or other healthcare provider. Look, I've been taking my blood pressure and I see it trending above 120 all the time, or I see it trending in the 140s, and this has been going on for the past 2 weeks. And certainly something is going on. And we mentioned stress earlier. I remember encountering a patient who had, she was young, she was in her early 30s, and she had a blood pressure of in excess of 150 systolic. Systolic is the one on the top. And it was job related. Mm. No sooner did she quit her job, did her blood pressure do what? Go right down to under 120 on 80. So I'm not advising that in this economic climate that persons quit their job. I am advising, however, that we try to find ways to manage the stresses under which we find ourselves. And another thing too, when we check our blood pressures in the morning, you need to empty your bladder, because it makes no sense sitting down there with a full bladder wanting to go to the bathroom, and you're trying to check your blood pressure and your bladder is full and you think, oh, I just need to go to the bathroom. And no, you need to empty your bladder as well. And one more point, you mentioned that you should check your blood pressure 30 minutes after taking caffeine, smoking, or having eaten. The Minister of Health advises that smoking is bad for your health. I just thought that I would put in that public service announcement. Yes. However, if you are inclined to smoking and you must smoke, please try to avoid smoking 30 minutes prior to taking your blood pressure. Now, Ms. Campbell,
yes,
have you thought about that advice that you would offer to persons who are journeying along the same path that you find yourself?
Yes, I would say that I have sought a doctor advice. I don't use additional salt. I don't cook the salt. However, I don't cook the salt meat, but I cut out most of my salt. I do like a little popcorn every now and then, but I cut out most of the salt. I cut out some of my meat. I cut out beef and lamb. I don't eat a lot of food. I add more vegetables to my food. And I'm exercising 3 days at the hardest, 2 days at the hardest shop, and 1 day on Zoom by the hardest shop. The special therapist, we do a Zoom session on Wednesdays, and 2 days in the clinic exercise.
Okay, so your advice to individuals then would be to
exercise.
I should give you your doctor title, because that's exactly what we say to persons: exercise and cut out the salt. The reductions, the evidence is there. You see reductions in the blood pressure when we exercise consistently and when we reduce the amount of salt. I've been able to reduce the amount of salt in my diet over the years, so much so that if I go to somebody else's house and eat, I can pick up the salt in their food. And once I went out with some family and we went to an establishment and we had something to eat there and we couldn't finish it. It was just too salty. We couldn't even distinguish between salt and bitter. That's how much salt was in the food at that particular establishment. So we're not knocking establishments, but we're saying you need to do what's necessary for your own health. Your health is the area that you need to be selfish in which you need to be selfish, right? So if you are somewhere, you're driving in a car and the person is driving lawlessly, all you need to do is press the bell or tell the person, wait, you know what? There's something that I need to do. Just pull over here for me, please, and get out. If it's somebody who is making you miserable at work and sending up your stress levels, ask to be relocated to another room. If that's not possible, and you can sit down with your earphones, seek peace, and pursue it. And these are little things that we can do so that we can be healthy. Let me just run that theme by you one more time. This is the theme for 2022 for World Hypertension Day, being celebrated on Tuesday. And it's measure your blood pressure accurately, control it, live longer. And the last part of that says live longer. Whilst we might not be able to determine when we are going to expire and transpire from this earth, certainly we don't want to be like that pigtail man and die with a pigtail in between our teeth, right? So if there are things that we can do to keep our blood pressure down, because there's so much damage that can be done by hypertension. There's damage to the eyes, there's damage to the kidneys, and significant damage to the heart and the blood vessels. If you damage your heart, you need to start looking out for those persons that we were mentioning without mentioning. Sit down and have a chat with them and do some planning if you don't intend to make any changes in your life, because there is where you are going to end up. So if you want to invest your money otherwise and enjoy life on this side of the mud, not under, but above, measure your blood pressure accurately. And we just heard from Miss Aline all the different ways that we should sit correctly and where we should position our arms, and the fact that we should use a cuff that's big enough. Don't try to squeeze on a small cuff. If you know your arm's fat, buy a bigger cuff. So we had all the tips, and then we could possibly live longer. Yes, Gredston?
Yes, let me just interrupt you quickly here for a last lap question. Good evening, Gredston. I'm now catching the last lap. That's where I got the term from, of the show. So I don't know if this question was asked already. If there's hypertension in my family, does that mean that I will absolutely be hypertensive myself? That's A. And B, how often should I get tested?
Right. So it doesn't mean that you're going to be hypertensive. It means that you are at risk for hypertension. Okay, so somebody was just sending me a message. Sorry about that pause. And how often you are tested is determined by the value of your blood pressure. So therefore, a blood pressure of less than 120 on 80, which is normal, that's an annual checkup. However, if the doctor checks you and your blood pressure is running 180 on 120, which has happened on more than one occasion, that person's blood pressure has been elevated and it was only discovered incidentally, you know, that they just decided to go to the doctor to get a checkup, and some numbers there that you can't imagine that these human beings are walking around with these numbers. I mean, I've shared my story before where I was walking around, but mine was because of pregnancy, and my blood pressure was 220 on 110. And I was walking around. I was walking around. So the silent killer. So the value of your blood pressure for the person who wrote in the question, it depends, that determines how often you're seen. So the higher it is, the shorter your intervals. If your blood pressure is normal, you just continue with your annual physicals. And if it is elevated, like say between 130 to 139, which is stage one hypertension, the doctor would bring you back in 4 to 6 months to check that blood pressure again. And you would have been advised to do the things that Ms. Campbell spoke about: reducing the salt, exercising, reducing stress in your life, and so on. So I hope that answers the writer's question.
Thank you.
I think it should. And that brings us exactly to 7 o'clock here in Barbados and across the Eastern Caribbean. I'm very excited because I really do enjoy doing the show. I think that today has been a very wonderful show. Has been a wonderful show. We learned a lot from Miss Campbell. And I think this is how I behave with my patients. When they lose 5 pounds, I'm in the office. I'm going to out myself, jumping up and down and clapping, and the same thing that I did here, because it's so exciting and rewarding as a healthcare professional when our patients do well. And we're not, your money is not our primary focus for those persons who work in the private setting. Your health is what we genuinely care about in most cases. Can't speak for everybody. We want the patients to do well. We want you to do well. So we hope that what we've been able to share here on the radio show this evening, the Better Health Radio Show, for those who are last lappers now joining us, we hope that this information has helped you. And I want to say a big thank you to the Heart and Stroke Foundation for all that you've been doing with our patients who have cardiovascular issues, strokes and heart attacks and cardiac rehabilitation, and those people who want to prevent, those people who don't want to walk that road. So, Ms. Campbell, a big thank you for sharing with us. It was wonderful meeting you.
You're welcome.
Yes, and to you, Ms. Ali, another wonderful evening sitting down here chatting with you. And Ms. Ali's smile, you can ask Gerson, is as wide as mine, right? All the back teeth are visible. And it's because we love what we do. We love what we do, helping people to live their best life. So until next Sunday, Lord willing, I'm your host, Dr. Renee Boyce, and this has been the Better Health Radio Show.
Well, thank you so kindly. That's Dr. Boyce, your presenter. And this evening she had as her guests Mrs. Margaret Campbell and Ms. Valerie Aline from the Heart and Stroke Foundation. Thank you all kindly for your presence. And as the good doc says, come next week, Sunday. As long as we're all still here, we'll come back and present to you another edition of the Better Health Radio Show. Have a good evening, everybody, and take care.
Good evening.
Thank you all.